Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist, and today we're going to kind of take a slow roll into the intros here that I usually blow past. We are going to plug some of our pieces that we've been dropping throughout the week for the respective websites that we work for. Number one, LockedOnEagles.com. I just dropped a daily fantasy play for Carson Wentz. It's the weekly Eagles play. Go check that out on LockedOnEagles.com. I also just dropped a Timmy Jernigan piece on there as well, what he's done for the interior of this defense. Also inside the pylon, I'm working on a glossary entry, which is an article on a red zone concept known as double china.
Double China, my love.
It's the best. It's totally undefeated. Also, by the time you hear this, because we're recording before the Raiders-Chiefs game, I dropped a piece on BreakingFootball.com about Tyreek Hill's status and whether you should play him or not. Look, check it out anyway. Go see if I was right. And if I was right, you'd be like, dang, I got to bookmark these guys at BreakingFootball.com and follow more of Michael Kiss's work because he's smart. Ben, how you doing, brother? What you got dropping this weekend?
Oh, every day is a good day to be alive, man. I'm more of a what's coming down the mountain than what I just dropped sort of a guy. But I have midterms and you don't. So that's my excuse there.
I got a baby.
All right. I think you might win that one. But either way, I have, as always, Five Friday for Sures, which is my weekly post on Bleeding Green Nation, where I just predict random nonsense that will happen over the weekend for fun. And then what we'll do this time is usually I have a film review for the opponent out by now, but because I have the extra days, expect Monday morning for the Washington Redskins enemy intel film review to come out. It's nice I've got all this extra time, though, because I'm mad deep in it, so this should be a good one. As far as NDT scouting goes, I always have my three prospect battles to watch on Friday, and so we'll be previewing three college games and particular NFL draft guys to watch. So if you want to learn a little bit more about how to scout live games and, you know, who the prospects are, that's always a good one to read. And then I'll have my scouting notes up for the weekend. This weekend I have Michigan Penn State, so all my fellow Penn State fans, what up, fun game. And then I also have Oklahoma State Texas. I got two heavy hitters, so I'm pretty excited.
Very excited for those. One more on LockedOnEagles.com. This weekend I'll have a red zone piece on Carson Wentz and their usage of Zach Ertz and how they get him isolated on favorable matchups. Okay, so what we're going to do today, we've got our Twitter mailbag, so we're going to be fielding Twitter questions from you guys. We're just going to talk real quick because we're going to hit the Redskins Eagles preview hot and heavy on the Monday show, so make sure you don't miss that. Today I just want to talk real quick about something that Jay Gruden had said this week before we get to the mailbag. Jay Gruden, well, also with today his comments about Carson Wentz, saying he can't believe how he got to us and how he's progressed, but he also said that he wants to get wide receiver Josh Doctson more snaps. Now, for the year he's only gone over 50% of the snaps in one game, which was week three. He played 20 snaps against us in week one. For the season, Doctson only has four catches for 90 yards, but he has two touchdowns. 72 of those yards came on throws over 20 yards. So he's shown some ability to make splash plays, and I really liked his ability at the catch point in the air coming out of college. Mm-hmm. This question is a two-parter for you, Ben. How did you feel about Josh Doctson coming out in the draft, and is this a sneaky Josh Doctson shine game?
Out of the draft, Josh Doctson was my dude. Big fan of Doctson, 2016 wide receiver. He's got that Inspector Gadget sort of game that's just fun to watch. You know what I mean? Like, that TCU puts a ball up for him. He can't get that. And then he gets that. And you're like, okay. You know, he's got a much bigger catch radius than his frame might suggest. And he's 6'2". He looks a little bit slight because I think he's probably a little bit north of 200 pounds. He's not the biggest dude as far as that goes. But he's got insane reach. And you know, he was a good route runner and everything like that. I know some people liked the Jordan Matthews comparison that he got, but I always thought it was more dynamic than J-Matt was.
I agree.
Then again, you know, Eagle fans, none of us think J-Matt's dynamic. So now, as far as if it's a sneaky shine game for him, I think it depends a lot on the personnel the Eagles roll out there, because you know who was a limited participant in practice today, Michael?
Ronald Darby.
Number 41, Ronald Darby.
Oh, yeah, 41. Mm-hmm. Come on. That's ridiculous. What are we doing? What are we doing with our cornerback numbers, man?
He explained it, man. It's not as heavy as 35 was or whatever, because the 3 and the 5. And yeah, Jimmy explained it. Go listen to the Jimmy Kemsky pod where Jimmy tells all about Ronald Darby's theory on picking jersey numbers. But listen, Ronald Darby, limited participant right now, coming off of an injury this serious. Do I think that he'll be back for Washington on Monday night? No. I don't think so. I think that he would have to be 100%, everything is perfect, coach, I can go. If there's even a hint of a doubt, the Eagles have survived pretty well with the corners they have. There's no reason to be any more fearful of Washington's passing attack than there was of Arizona's or Carolina's, in my opinion. I think that you know, you won't see Darby out there. But Darby's coming down the mountain. Yeah. If it's not this week, then it's probably San Francisco. And maybe if there's a setback, it's not San Francisco. But then you got the bye week, and I think it's definitely Denver. The fact that today, October 19th, when we're recording, week 7 of the season, the Eagles had 53 participants in practice. No DNPs. No did not participate. Beautiful. That's huge. The biggest thing left for the Eagles season is keep Carson Wentz healthy, in my opinion. That's prerogative number one moving forward. And right now, everyone is healthy, obviously besides your twin Chris Maragos, but still.
Yeah. Speaking of that, we'll touch on Chris Maragos here in a second. Let's get to the Twitter mailbag. My boy, our boy, Jeff Schramm, @Jeff_Schramm, asked me a couple of questions in the PM for the Twitter Friday mailbag. So first question, trade deadline in 12 days. What player would you like to add to the roster via trade without giving up much?
It's funny because we have a question about him a little bit later, but if that Carlos Hyde sort of rumor was legit, I'm very down for Carlos Hyde to come play, because the Eagles have a functional running back room right now without him, and Carlos Hyde is kind of an injury prone sort of a player. And so you bring him in, and then God forbid he gets injured, you know, that's awful because you traded for him and he's a player and you don't want players to get injured, but at least you've already seen what your running back room looks like without Carlos Hyde there. And so you're just kind of back to where you were. That's number one. Number two, this is the last year of his contract. He's a free agent after this year. And so if you're trading for Carlos Hyde, similar to the Timmy Jernigan trade, where all we did was swap thirds with Baltimore and we got Timmy Jernigan, well, one of the main reasons Baltimore did that was, okay, we're going to cut Jernigan again next year, so let's get out of him what we can. And I believe that works advantageously for them getting compensatory picks, right? I always forget how that formula works, but I'm pretty sure it does.
Yep.
So San Francisco is incentivized to make the trade for that reason. You know, they've got Joe Williams and they've got Matt Breida, two rookies behind Carlos Hyde, so they don't necessarily have him in their long-term plans. And if you can shell him off for something now, you might as well do it. So I think that that rumor holds water. I really do. I think that they would be fine. If they're fine moving Navarro Bowman, they're going to move Carlos Hyde. They're moving away from the veterans.
Yeah.
Carlos Hyde is a juicy dude. If you bring him into this running back room, he provides a spark that is not in it right now.
Totally fine with that as well. Okay, number two from our boy Jeff. Next spring, do you go OT or running back in round one of the draft? Just gut feeling on this one.
Jeff asks good questions, man.
Yeah.
That's the sort of question you should be asking right now, and the answer is offensive tackle.
Absolutely.
With a gigantic asterisk. And the asterisk says, if the league is stupid enough to let Saquon Barkley get anywhere near where Philadelphia could trade up, you do it. Because he's insane. Right? But that's absurd. The answer is offensive tackle. The reason being, one, this success that Philadelphia is seeing right now, which none of us really foresaw coming into the season, you know, like a 5-1 start tops the NFC, is, I think, in large part due to the best offensive line play in the league right now. I would argue in larger part due to that than it is due to Carson Wentz's development. Right. This offensive line is playing like the best line in the league.
Yep.
That doesn't change the fact that the offensive tackle situation is still very tenuous. You've got Jason Peters, who Brandon Thorne, who writes for FanRag Sports, is going to drop a piece on Jason Peters. He's been talking about the timeline. Jason Peters is an insanely good football player. Yeah. For 35 years old, it's just flat out stupid. But Jason Peters playing fantastic football, but he is 35. Eventually, that train's going to end. And then Lane Johnson, we talk about the suspension. If anything, the performance of this offensive line reinforces the need for offensive tackle. It doesn't diminish from it. The excellent play of Jason Peters and Lane Johnson makes it even more important that we make sure we have that tackle for the future if and when we move on from these guys. Running back is very important, but if there's anything that Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara are showing you right now, it's that you can get production with good running back picks on day two. I know everybody's freaking out about Donnell Pumphrey. Calm down. You can get good running backs later. You don't need to spend around one pick, especially in this class. Go get an offensive tackle.
Like we've talked about before, the day two running backs that produce, like, who's the next Kareem Hunt? Well, you know what? Who's the next Jay Ajayi? Who's the next Le'Veon Bell? Who's the next LaShawn McCoy? Who's the next other top 10 running back. They all come from day two for the most part. So you can get those guys later on. Getting that guy at offensive tackle that's going to plug and play right away is much harder further down you go in the draft. So I 100% agree. You got to protect your quarterback.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.
Ben, some other questions from the Twitter timeline. What do you have for us?
Oh, for sure, for sure. First one comes from actually my boss, Kyle Krabs, at NDT Scouting, who asks, why haven't the Eagles hired at NDT Scouting yet? So Kyle would like for us to tell him why he has not yet been hired by the team that we cover and we have no inside information about whatsoever.
I'm going to say, and this might be controversial, I hope it's not, the Eagles have not hired Kyle Krabs because he said that he would wear a romper to the Senior Bowl. I can't trust a guy like that. I can't. Not only that, you know, there was reports about Kendall Beckwith coming into the draft that maybe he didn't care about football enough, that linebacker out of LSU, because, you know, he's got a car and a family and a horse.
I hate it when people do that.
But Kyle Krabs, I think he cares about his hair more than football. That says a lot because he loves football. So I question his commitment outside of his hair game. To be honest with you. I mean, his hair is beautiful, but...
Kyle Krabs at NDT Scouting. Great follow for all things hair and football and scouting. And not really rompers, just that one time. Justin Latola at Linnea's Daddy. He asked, why don't the Eagles promote Nate Gary from the practice squad to replace Chris Maragos? He asked this at like, you know, 8 a.m., 9 a.m. Central.
It was like 8:47, and then the Eagles dropped the news at like 9:47, right?
The Eagles are like, yo, Chris Maragos on IR, don't worry, we promoted Nate Gary. And you and I both immediately went to Justin, we were like, dude, what? Because like, well, that's like a very logical play. It was still really cool how that happened. We got to talk though, because... So I know you're a huge Chris Maragos fan. For those of you who don't know, they're doppelgangers. Mike and Chris look exactly the same. So Mike's feeling the pain too right now a little bit in some voodoo hooju sort of way.
Yeah.
But I want to know how you feel about Nate Gary, the prospect. You know, what did you see when the Eagles drafted him? When you went back to the tape, what do you like for him? You know, can he contribute at all? Will he make the active 46? What do you think?
I think he's a good depth safety. He's better than a guy like than we had like an Ed Reynolds hanging around for a while. So I like that. Ed. I think he can definitely contribute on the special teams. I love his swagger. I mean, when he picked off, we talked about this before, but when he picked off Josh Allen in that 5-interception game for Allen, and Jerry handed him the ball back, and Allen ended up getting a penalty for throwing it away. I thought that was brilliant. So I love chirpy guys like that, and we got a secondary full of them, especially when we get Sidney Jones back. Rasul is one of the biggest chirpers in the game. I think he's solid. I think he's limited in coverage, and that's why we're kind of trying to work him out at linebacker, where he's going to be a little bit undersized. So kind of like a specialty role player, in my opinion, with limited upside, really.
So you have him active or Jalen Watkins active?
I would have Jalen Watkins active.
Yeah, me too. Right. So I don't know if he's there in the active 46 to start. If injuries happen, then he gets there. And I think he can help you. Just like you said, he's a physical guy. He's a high motor guy. But the linebacker production, I think you got to wait a couple years to see that, simply because he hasn't played the position since his freshman year of college.
People underrate the fact, and people did this with Hassan Reddick too. You want to play him at linebacker. Some people wanted to play him at linebacker, but he's never made reads like a linebacker before. It's like learning an entirely new position. So yeah, it's difficult.
Okay. So our next question comes from JR, who's JR Reed Draft Scout, who's the man. Oh. And he has a new podcast, actually, Climbing the Big Board, which is the Climbing the Pocket draft podcast, which the first episode dropped. It's pretty solid. But he asked, if we are clean after we shower, then why do we put the towel that we used to dry off in the dirty clothes basket? Which really stumped me for a solid like 2 minutes. And I had to think about it. Here's my answer.
Right.
Because wet things attract bacteria. You know what I'm saying? Like what? Okay. Like that? That's why. Because the question with like, so we dry off because we don't want to be wet. Right now the towel's wet. But if you just leave, like, you know, if you just like leave that hanging to dry, you know, like so you can use it again. Okay. Like, you know, I mean, I live in a dorm. Like I have one towel. That's the situation we're in. But wet things that are lying around attract. That's where bad. That's where mold and disgusting things happen. So you gotta get that in the dirty basket because you have to clean that eventually anyway.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I probably use the towel 2 to 3 days before I put it in the laundry basket. I just hang it.
JR is aghast right now.
I'm a dude. Let me be a dude. I'm just a dude doing dude things.
Just guys being dudes.
That's right, yeah. We got a question from my boss over at Inside the Pylon. We got our bosses hitting us up today. Mark Schofield says, which member of the Eagles coaching staff is most like Henry Philippe Benoni Omer Joseph Pétain, specifically his leadership at Verdun?
This is the part where I go get a snack and you just, yeah, I'll be back later.
I could really go ham on this for a while. I'm going to try to keep this somewhat short. First, let's set the stage, though. World War I. Battle of Verdun in France, the German plan, or at least of the plan of the chief of general staff, von Falkenhayn, was called Operation Judgment, and Falkenhayn said that he wanted to bleed France white. This was a planned meat grinder, which is ominous already. And Ben, sometimes I like to play a game with history, and you could do this too. I try to figure out where the worst place on earth is on any given day. So like, for instance, the day of the Battle of Cannae, where Hannibal slaughtered a bunch of Romans, that would be the worst place. The Battle of the Teutoburg Forest, where Arminius slaughtered a bunch of Romans as well, that would also be a very bad day. All 10 months of the Battle of Verdun was the worst place on earth on all of those days, without question. And I'll avoid getting into too much detail here, but the Google machine is great if you want to learn more about this horrific battle. They essentially pitted the Germans and the French against each other in a heavily fortified, heavily wooded area, and then unleashed pure hell with the biggest artillery bombardment known to man. So here, just some quick quotes from this people that actually were involved in this freaking thing. Quote, men were squashed, cut in two, or divided from top to bottom, blown into showers, bellies turned inside out, skulls forced into the chest as if by a blow from a club.
Jeez.
Quote, you eat beside the dead, you drink beside the dead, you relieve yourself beside the dead, and you sleep beside the dead. People read that the front line was hell. How can people begin to know what that one word, hell, means? And one last one, showing a common theme, quote, hell cannot be so terrible as this. Humanity is mad. It must be mad to do what it is doing. An artery of French blood was split on February 21st, and it flows incessantly in large spurts. I saw a man drinking avidly from a green scum-covered marsh where he lay his black face downward in the water, a dead man lying on his stomach and swollen as if he had not stopped filling himself with water for days. To die from a bullet seems to be nothing. Parts of our being remain intact, but to be dismembered, torn to pieces, reduced to pulp, this is the fear that flesh cannot support, and which is fundamentally the great suffering of the bombardment. All right, so now I got to get into Pétain real quick. Google this dude, French general.
Okay.
His mustache is the source of his power. It is amazing. When the battle started, he actually had to be fetched from a hotel by a staff officer who happened to know which mistress he would be laying with that night. So he was kind of known as a womanizer. He got around with the ladies.
All right.
He commanded the Second Army at the beginning of the battle. Then he was promoted, overseeing 52 divisions as the commander of Army Group Center. The Germans, this is where Pétain's brilliance comes through. The Germans didn't recycle their infantry divisions in Verdun. Conversely, Pétain rotated his out every 2 weeks, and he also organized the truck transport of artillery, including building the road in which they would travel, now lovingly called the Sacred Way, allowing them to fire 15 million shells on the Germans in just a 5-month period. So this forward thinking, namely the application of his personal philosophy of firepower kills in conjunction with the aforementioned rotating divisions of fresh troops, proved pivotal to the French success. He's known as the savior. And now here's where I make my connection. He was considered by the French as the most accomplished defensive tactician of any army. Jim Schwartz 8 times orchestrated a defense that was on the better half of points allowed rankings in the league. So Jim Schwartz is my Henry Philippe Benoni Omer Joseph Pétain.
I feel like there should be a round of applause. Like, put it in the post. Just like, yay, and then clapping.
By the way, if you want to hear more World War One history, I'm going to be dropping it on Locked On Eat. No, I'm not. I'm not.
I'll be like, all right, I'll read it. Sounds good. I just want to see the dude's mustache. That's going to be a priority once we're done.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. It's powerful. It's like, it's Jeff Fisher's like, whoa, man, take it easy.
All right. So football. Ryan Kieran, who's our dude, writes for Setting the Edge, is the man. I like this a lot. Start one, bench one, trade one. Carlos Hyde, Mark Ingram, CJ Anderson. You want first crack?
Does it depend on their situation? Like if I'm the Saints and I've got Kamara too, does that come into play? Or you just want to do it like,
no,
those are my only running backs.
So they all have the same contracts, all things equal.
I am trading CJ Anderson.
Correct answer.
I am sitting Mark Ingram, and I am starting Carlos Hyde.
Dude, 3 for 3.
Nice.
Here's the thing. When it comes to those guys, you just trade the one for whom you'll get the most value, the most return, which I think would be CJ Anderson, in my opinion. I think that you could get the most from him. And then you keep the other two, and who's going to be your starter? I mean, Hyde's got more, I think, just juice as a running back in general. And then Mark Ingram can, whatever, you know, change tempo. It doesn't really matter. last but not least, as far as the questions go for today. Oh, Deuce, who's in tweet jail. This is one of your buddies from the Scouting Academy. It's not Reverend Deuce. His new username because he's put in tweet jail because he's posted clips of the NFL. He wants to know, what does Philly have that takes former Saints defensive backs and turns them into all pros? Is it the cheesesteak? How many former Saints defensive backs do we have? I can only think of the one obvious one.
Yeah, other than Malcolm Jenkins. I mean, Malcolm Jenkins, we didn't really turn him into that. It just took him a while to get acclimated to playing the safety position after switching from cornerback, really. Other than that, I would say that the city of Philadelphia does that because of hashtag hard work, hashtag dedication, hashtag grind.
Grit.
Hashtag grit. Hashtag grit grind. Ooh, that's a new hashtag. I agree, man. Jenkins is playing the best football in his life. All right, man, we got a weekend coming up. I'm not going to be able to talk to you until Sunday after we watch the one on 4 o'clock games. Then we're going to hit it hard and heavy for the Redskins Eagles preview. We're going to be bringing you all types of nerdy, nerdy stats. Keep it tuned in. Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst. Catalyst.